It's all for you, man.
If this falls forward, it'll be
the worst.
It'll be great.
So anybody twittering the session, it's SX. Oh, you can raise your hands if you want. I'm sure there is. But SXSW story is the hashtag. This is just random going through them. So if you guys giggle about something, we're not going to know what it is. So it's all good. But please do tweet away. It's always a good thing. Thank you guys for braving the rain. This Austin sunshine kind of sucks this year, but I'm sure it'll get better. So thank you for coming out. Also, we're hoping to do lots of questions and answers, because there's nothing worse than coming to a session where the panelists just go on and on and on. You never get that question you really want answered. So please, at any point, get up. All they ask is go to this microphone here and ask the questions. We will answer as many as we can, because we'd rather let you pick our brains than us lecture on and on and on.
Brains.
Yeah. And Charlie might sing, so be careful. And his wife's going to shake her head the entire time. All right, so you are in the Power of Visual Storytelling. If that's not what you wanted, if you wanted the Pinterest 101 session, that's out in the hallway or down the street. It's not here.
Pinterest is kind of visual.
Okay, that's my litmus test of you guys to see what kind of audience you got.
That one guy got up and left.
I was hoping someone, booed, I was like, crap, we're dead.
Somebody like left. Damn. Like, oh, this isn't Pinterest?
You just made Pinterest your bitch.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And it's only begun. All right.
It's good talking.
All right, so I am CC Chapman. I'm the author of a book, Content Rules. I do a lot of work with companies to tell their stories, to find the angle that any company, I believe, can tell a story. And I've got these great panel of people here today who are each going to introduce themselves, talk a little bit about their area of expertise for visual storytelling, where they think it's going, what they think it's, why it's important. And then we're going to do a little Q&A, answer your questions, answer my questions, and we'll go from there. So highly interactive. We want to talk a lot. It's a visual panel, but we're going to talk, which is kind of ironic, but we're good with that. So I am going to pass it over to Carl to go first.
We skip Becky.
I skip Becky because Becky wants to go not first.
I don't like going.
I am Carl Good, just like Good. It's Carl Good. And I am the former director of graphics at Newsweek magazine. I was there for 10 years, at 7 as their graphics director. I personally visualize everything from how to plant a garden so that flowers bloom all day to it was my department that covered 9/11 down the street. So we diagrammed all the buildings and stuff and explained those stories, you know, and then the war, the aftermath and all that stuff. So now I teach at Michigan State University School of Journalism, and I'm gone way beyond journalism. I'm very interested in just storytelling in general for businesses and anything, and I've become a very big fan of that. So,
hello. My name is Charlie Wahlberg. No one can spell Wahlberg, so I go by Charlie Curve. I'm an agency hack for 20 years. Did half my time selling cars. Now I help sell ideas.
I'm Becky Johns. I work for a integrated advertising and PR agency in Chicago called Kramer Krasselt. So I'm part of the agency PR team there, but I also do freelance photography, which is mostly why I'm on this panel.
And she jumps out of planes whenever possible.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with storytelling, but it is true.
Come on now.
Yes. So I skydive on weekends and chase my adrenaline rush.
Luckily, she's alive to be here today.
Yes, I am alive here.
So, Carl, take it away.
Oh, well, you know, I have notes to make myself stay on track, because I'm very scattered, as my wife will say, and she said, stay on track. And then we're going to be very brief on our notes. I'm going to probably talk for about 8 minutes. And I'm not going to talk about the importance of visual storytelling, because I think that's already, you wouldn't be here if you didn't already think it was important. What I'm going to talk about are some of the rules or some of the things to think about. And, you know, this is like, I teach classes. I have 500 students this semester and in 4 different classes, and they never take notes either. So, but these are some things to think about. We can talk about them later if you have any questions. But, you know, in my book, storytelling is really what we're all here is the best story wins. And the best story wins mean, I have a lawyer friend, and my lawyer friend said that his job in front of a jury is to educate and persuade the jury to act in a certain way, which is basically in favor of their client. We're all here for the same reason. We want to learn how to educate people about what we do or something. It might even be trying to get a job, you know, to basically tell our story, tell a story, and then persuade people to act. But we don't have a captivated jury. We have to convince people to listen to our stupid stories. Everyone in this room has stories. What's going to make yours the one they want to all listen to? So we have to basically hook them in some way that makes them want to stick around. And so I'm going to give you some ideas on how to do that. And one of the things is, you know, some of these may sound obvious to you, but it's good to be reminded. You know, for one thing, if you think about story, you want to make sure you're telling the right story. There are a lot of people telling the wrong story. You see ads and all sorts of things, and it's just like, boy, what were they thinking? It's sort of like if you're telling a story about your combat experience, you're going to tell a whole different story. You want to know who your audience is and what the messages you want that audience to receive and that will resonate with that audience. So if you're talking about your combat experience, you're going to want to make sure that the story that you tell to Conan and his warriors is going to be very different than the story you tell to the local ladies' garden club and guys' garden club. So you want to make sure you know who your audience is and the story that you're telling will resonate with them. You want to make sure you're telling a good story. It can't just be any story. It has to be a really good story. Like one of my students just said, they have to do a personal profile of somebody, and they said, gee, can I do my grandmother? She came over from Italy, Sicily. I said, was your grandmother a lesbian? Because my grandmother was a lesbian. And then one of my students raised their hand right away and said, your grandmother was a lesbian? And I said, why, yes. And she said, why are you here? I said, well, she was in denial for a long time. And they thought, that's an interesting story. The minute I said that, hands went up. They wanted to know if I was true. Because students do that. They like to pick on you, and that rivets them. Coming over from Sicily is not a good story. My grandmother came over from Norway. So you want to make sure it's a good story that people actually want to listen to, and it has to be told really, really well. You want to make sure you tell it really well. So like, you know, when you tell the story around a campfire, for those of you that have been around a campfire, lucky enough to have been around a campfire, listening to ghost stories when you were a kid, there was always that grown-up who told the ghost stories, and you just could not sleep that night. You thought you were about to be eaten alive by some critter out in the woods. But it was like, but can you imagine telling those stories like, there was like this like guy, and like this guy was like, you know, I don't know, like, you know, he had like this car, and this car was like blue, and already I want to fall over and kill that person and go for their jugular. I'm the ghost story here. So I hate a story badly told that I have to sit through. All of you will be trapped by that guy out there. You'll be trapped by his telling your story, his story, and it's going to be so boring you want to kill him. So those are some things to think about stories. Write story, good story, tell a good, and told really well. The other things are just about literacy. You want to think about the different literacies that are involved in storytelling. And there are a lot of different literacies in this world, but the ones that I think are that resonate the most with storytelling, visual storytelling, any storytelling. As far as I'm concerned, a good story is visual. If you paint it with words, The first literacy is verbal literacy. If you're going to tell a good story and you have no other way of visualizing that story, your words, the craft of wordsmithship, the craft of writing and telling a good story verbally, you should be painting images in their brains with your ability to craft words. You know, and like, for example, one of my students, I have my students blogging. I read 93 blogs a week. It drives me crazy. But one of them wrote about, like, She was a graduate student too. Oh my God, Whitney Houston died. Like, I was watching TV with like my mom, and my mom's like, oh my God, Whitney Houston died. And I said, oh my God. So I wrote back to her and said, you don't have to grow up, but your writing has to grow up. It's grown-up time. You're not 12. And she wrote an amazing piece about how she felt about Whitney Houston after that. She was embarrassed, she said, that I had said that as a comment under her blog in public. But it was like a slap in the face to her. So good, really learned to use words. Visual is another literacy. So there's the verbal, there's the visual, of course. And when I say visual, I mean, you know, word art is not high art. And I get assaulted everywhere by bad design. Design is the glue that holds all of the visuals together. When you talk about visuals in cinematography and video, in photography, design is composition, layout, lighting. All of that is good design, and it's a good eye. And you want to make sure that you're using, there are a lot of different ways you can tell a story. You want to make sure you're using the medium that best presents that story visually. Is it a map? Is it a chart? Is it a photo narrative, a slideshow that's narrated? Is it a video? Is it a poster? What is the visual way you're going to? Is it a mixture of all of the above? So you want to make sure that you have that. The third literacy is I call theatrical literacy. And I made that up, but it's theatrical literacy. You need a flair for the dramatic. You got to be able to tell a story around that campfire that is just like you become the monster. You know how to just scare the shit out of somebody, you know, because it's a ghost story, or make somebody cry because you're telling them about the loss of some amazing human being, or you got to make them laugh, cry, fear, whatever it is. You need to be able to master the suspense, the drama. And you do that with words. You do that with body language. Theater involves all of that. You have to throw yourself in. You cannot be bashful. You have to throw yourself into the character and into the story. You can't be hesitant. You can't be fast. You can't be lazy. You have to really be committed to this, whatever you're going to do, if you want to get noticed. The last thing is technical literacy. You need to know how to use and make all of those things. If not, and it's hard to know all of this, but at least you need to know. I call it, many of you call it, there's a T shape. You have a broad understanding of a lot of different visual medium, but you're very deep on one, so it's a T. You're very deep on maybe video, but you understand the importance of all the others and how to at least work with other people who can do those literacies. So those are my things. Right story, good story, told well. Literacies, the four communication literacies are, in my mind, are verbal, visual, theatrical, and technical. And that's my talk.
Cool.
Wow.
Charlie?
And scene. I could just say what he said, because that was, yeah.
I took notes. See, well, I stayed on topic.
I don't have notes, and I'm not going to do anything.
Camera.
Theatrical literacy is very important to me, so.
I'll just repeat what he says.
I think we have a couple of real big problems. I think education, the way we're teaching folks, is killing storytelling. I think journalism, anyone who's ever had a journalism class outside of Carl's, you're killing storytelling. All right? And I also think Instagram is killing storytelling.
Hey.
Boo.
Hey.
Let me get to my...
Carry on.
I wasn't provocative. This is awesome. I'm mad.
When we first learn to research a topic, what do we have to do? You need more words here. You need more pages. Can I double space? Can I go with a lighter font? Go with extended. That'll give me another page. Because we're always worried about our word count and our page counts. We need to fatten up the story. And that's how they teach us. In the same way, when we're talking to someone, we want people to listen. We want your undivided attention. We want to have the last word. We want to tell you the whole story. Yet when we listen and when we read, we do something completely different. When we're listening, how many times do they get, what's the point? Just, come on, help me out here. When we are reading the paper, we skim. Blogs, Google says we have 3 seconds till people click the back button. So why do we learn to write and learn to talk so much different than how we read and how we listen? And if we're going to be good content marketers, if we're going to be good storytellers, we have to erase those bad habits. I really think instead of teaching kids to write term papers, we should spend a whole semester teaching them to write a good headline. Because you could be the best blogger in the world. You could be telling these great stories for yourself or for your company. And if your headline sucks, bye-bye. You have to sell. You've got to know how to write a headline that grabs right visually. You know, your headline has to be a billboard, outdoor advertising. When you're driving down the road, sometimes a great billboard can cause an accident, and that's great for everyone except the person in the accident. But you need to get people's attention. And when we're on Twitter, oh my gosh, we're not driving 70, we're going 120. We've got so many feeds on there. There's shiny objects galore. Is your object the shiniest? Is it going to stand out? Is someone going to click it? The acronym I like to use, I just tweeted a link to it, is WISP. Think WISP. Before you post, think, would I share this? Because so often when we're in that marketing position, oh, I got to get a blog post out. Oh, I got to post a photo. We're going through the motions, and this is where we get back to Instagram. Hey, we're documenting our life. Remember I think it was a Verizon commercial 5 years ago where Dad's sitting on the patio. I'm sitting on the back patio. Dad, no one wants to know that. All right, so we've stopped doing that on Twitter. No one's, I still hang out pooping, but Now it's Instagram. Whoops, I'm having a salad. It's a photo now. It's 1,000 words that don't matter. So if you're going to document a story, tell a story. Memorialize something that's worth memorializing, that's going to grab our attention, that's going to move it forward. So if you click on that wisp link, you know, we want to sing it. Tell a story. Tickle our inner Cliff Clavin. Find that factoid. Don't just give us the who, what, where, when, how, because we've tapped out. We tap out really quick nowadays. The other challenge we have as content marketers is how many ways can I talk about window treatments? I already posted that. You need to learn how to find that next facet and turn it into the next story. Don't try and get the whole story out. This isn't journalism anymore. Think of it as a cereal. Not breakfast cereal, you could have a breakfast, not that one. Think of it as a story series that we're giving you one little piece of that story. Tune in next week. Will they make it? Okay? Our brands are like diamond rings. And if you've ever seen a woman, when she first gets engaged, she kind of has this jitter. Shiny.
Wrong hand.
And what?
Left hand. Left hand.
Oh, here's another good tip. Sidebar here.
Sorry.
Women, if you're single and you were trying to pick up a guy, or you have a ring on either ring finger, we're idiots. We don't know which one you wear. Okay?
Whoops.
So do what you want. Just know if you've got one of these, we think there's a goalie in the crease already. Doesn't mean we can't score, just means there's someone. Right? So.
What is happening right now?
Yeah. I have
here,
no
you want
idea.
Some notes? Here, stay on track. Here.
Sparkly.
Yeah. Sparkly. Okay, so
put a ring on it.
And what are they doing? They're not saying, look at my ring. No one takes a ring. Oh, that facet's nice, this facet's nice, this facet's nice. They're trying to capture light. Because light, shiny things, shiny objects. We all have shiny objects in the room. You're trying to catch that light in the ring so people notice it and see how pretty it is. Your brand has many facets. Don't explain each face of it. Don't explain all the cuts. Catch the light in our eye, and we'll come back again and again to hear more of your stories.
Can you... God, Charlie
so
kind of turned me on.
You were the person who wanted to go after him.
Yeah, I'm regretting that a lot.
Wow.
So I don't know how to follow either one of those things. Because I don't have a spiel or that much energy right now. But basically, when I started talking to Cece about putting together this panel, for me it started because we're both photographers, yeah. And we've talked a lot about Instagram is awesome, for the record. We definitely firmly believe that a photo can tell a story, and you can say whatever you want about 1,000 words and all that stuff.
Absolutely, but it's got to be a compelling photo.
I completely agree. But let's not hate on Instagram.
Infographics are great, too, if they're done well. But a lot of people phone them in now. Phoning in anything other than pizza is a bad idea.
I don't
Could
disagree.
Someone please order a pizza?
I don't disagree. Anyway, so I think the point I'm trying to make is I come from a journalism background, so it started out being a writer, and I had to learn how to tell stories with writing, and I had to understand how to write good headlines and follow it up with something great. And then my journalism teacher in high school put a camera in my hand and said, okay, stop writing now and go tell a story a different way. And it basically shaped the way I take photos from that point forward. And so once I started looking at the world like a photojournalist did and had to start telling stories without words, with the exception of maybe a short caption, and then I sort of transitioned into the PR business, which is what I do now. I mean, all the stuff with branding and marketing and advertising and all of the things that we've talked about are totally irrelevant. But from a PR perspective, a lot of times what we're doing, we have to illustrate our stories through quotes from our executives, which if you work in PR, you know it sucks to write those pretty much 100% of the time. So it's thinking about painting pictures by evoking emotion, and I know everybody here knows that, but there are definitely ways to do that, and sort of what I encourage people to do is try to take a picture of something and tell a story, and then try to take that exact same picture to tell the same story from a different angle or featuring a different person, and basically see how many things you can find and then figure out which one actually tells the story. So that's kind of where I'm coming from on wanting to talk about this topic.
So one of the other things I want to mention is, you know, I saw some tweets fly by and stuff, but the fact of the matter is storytelling does apply to every single business, vertical, person. I mean, musicians singing songs is storytelling, movie making, nonprofits, you know, the most smallest company in the world, everybody has a story to tell. And the trick is figuring out how to get that story out of them. I mean, I spent a lot of time with people, even, you know, over breakfast this morning, some friends of mine were trying to tell the story of an individual, trying to suck that story out of somebody. And it's not, you know, and we know this person, but it's like, what story are you going to tell the world about you to get people interested in you? You know, it's that personal elevator pitch, if you want to talk about it. Or, you know, when people, let's face it, there's a room full of people here. You're going to turn, you're going to meet somebody here at South By, and if you don't, you're doing it wrong, where you're, someone's going to say, so what do you do? And if you don't have that answer, that's you know, you need to have that answer, and that's your story. And some of the most blandest, boringest, at least in my world, companies still find time to tell cool stories. I mean, I know one of the best examples I love to talk about is there's this company that makes soldering irons. You know, the most exciting thing, they sell soldering into like big industries and stuff, but they have 14 bloggers writing a blog every day and taking pictures of solder. Doesn't mean anything to me, but they're telling their story to their audience. Your story that you're trying to craft doesn't have to appeal to the world. It just has to appeal to the people that you want it to appeal to. That's why I hate this whole thing about viral videos and all that. You know, need millions of views. When in reality, you need, I'd rather take 1,000 views from people who might actually buy my product or donate to my nonprofit or whatever it is, than 1,000,000 people who are just going to look at it and go, oh, that's cool, and pass it along. So figure out ways that, you know, the story is compelling enough to the people you're trying to reach. And it's not, don't get hung up in the tools. That's the biggest thing. That's why, I picked on Pinterest because it's the latest thing. But, I mean, you can pick on Instagram or anything else as well. It's what it's really about is, you know, your story. And then figure out the tools to tell it. I mean, I love taking pictures. I'm not so great with video. I'm figuring it out as I go along. But figure out what's the best venue to tell your story or your client's story. I'm being over general. And one of the things that Carl said that I could not agree with more, and I think people forget it way too often, is the importance of design. You know, and it gets as simple as, like, you see an article, the way it's written in a newspaper, it looks nice, or on a certain blog, it looks nice, it's laid out nice. And that tells part of the story to the words, too. I mean, if I see a script letter at the beginning of it, that tells me the sort of article I'm going to see rather than some big, you know, impact font. You know, there's different layouts. I mean, that's why I still love magazines, because just the layout and the feel. While newspapers are going to die, I hope magazines don't. I mean, yeah. I really hope not. Sorry to anyone who works for newspapers out there, but, you know, the journalism's never going to die. Storytelling's not going to die. Just the physical newspaper as we know it today, I think, is destined to fall away.
Yeah, I agree.
So one question I got for you guys, I'm really curious. How can somebody, can you be taught to become a better storyteller? And if you can, how can somebody become a better storyteller, either for their clients or for themselves? I'm trying to keep it general, but can you be taught to become a better storyteller, or is it something that's in you?
I think that there are people who are just amazing storytellers from birth. Like, you know, some people are really amazing, but there are people who... You know, I wouldn't have 500 students, I think, if they didn't think they could be better storytellers. But it is great to see a metamorphosis of these people in the classroom just during one semester, where they go from being completely oblivious to anything to actually being able to have the confidence to stand. We do a lot of improv, a lot of storytelling. We're talking a lot about verbal storytelling, and, you know, this is also about visual, but a lot of visual storytelling comes from standing on your feet and having to improvise in front of somebody you don't even know and just start talking and telling that story and just making them not wondering how to get away from you. And that's theatrics, that's learning. And then so improv gets people thinking and feeling comfortable on their feet and thinking on their feet and having to respond very quickly to something the way I'm doing right now to that stupid question I was just asked. And no, I was just picking on CC Chapman. I was just picking on you. That was a great question. I was just picking on CC. He's fun to pick. Look at that face. He's so mad now. But yeah, so I think you can learn. I think you can learn how to use all of the tools. You can learn how to do a lot of things. Being creative, by the way, there's a thing called the creative process. Are those of you that are thinking like, oh, I'm like not creative, you want to talk to that guy wearing the candy cane socks over there down on cubicle B? He's the creative one at the company. You want to talk to him. There's a thing called the creative process that anyone can learn. And if you can learn, it's a basic four-step, or depending on who you look at, four-step process. Like, you know, you have to define the problem, make sure you're asking the right question, throw ideas at it, narrow those ideas down. That's the two. You have to have critical thinking thrown at that, tear that idea apart. If it's not a good idea, go back to the beginning. If it's a good idea, go to the fourth one, which is implementation. And anyone can learn that process, and the more people involved in the creative process in a company, the better ideas you're going to come up with. Sitting in a boardroom and saying, anybody got any ideas? Everybody looks down at their pad like this, hoping no one calls on them because they haven't got a freaking clue what to say. All of these things they can be learned, but you have to be a good student. I have students that are on Facebook, the whole class. I have other students who are sitting in the front row, no offense back there, and they're like, want to learn, they want to become good. And there are just people who really care, and there are people who just don't give a shit. Those people will never learn, and they're going to be knocking on your door looking for jobs, and you have to watch out for them. But you can learn, you just have to really want to and have a good teacher.
I think you've got a few different ways to look at it. I think storytelling is a muscle. CC's been podcasting for how many years, how many episodes now?
Well, it was 2004. I can't do math, so.
They had pods back then? You know, and look at how you've grown as a podcaster. So the improv, the first time you get on an open mic night, you suck. And, you know, 100th time in, you probably still suck. But you keep getting better. Yep. Becky has a project called Friends in a Frame. And, you know, where you started with that, where you've ended, just watching her photo portfolio grow, we all get better by doing. But, you know, some people are born a great storyteller, but they still improve. I think the other big piece of it, Spielberg is a great storyteller. He still has an editor. All right. Becky, when you do a photo shoot, with one subject, how many shots do you normally take?
A lot. You know, I don't even.
So, you know, it's 100 to 1, 200 to 1.
I take 300 and use 4.
And in the Instagram world, we take one picture and we post it.
Okay,
there's
wait,
no
wait,
call.
Wait, stop. All right.
Stop hating on Instagram.
I saw people giving you shit on there. I'm going to give you shit here.
Okay.
Okay. Instagram is a tool.
Tool, right.
Yes, there are tools using it, posting pictures of their salad and another thing. What?
What if it's a beautiful
what did I
salad?
Say?
No, they laughed. It was funny what you said.
Tool. Sorry, I wasn't even paying attention to it. Sorry.
You said
tools. But no, Instagram can be an amazing piece of storytelling. It's what you push out to, what you
right.
push to it.
That my point. I wasn't begging. I'm sorry. I will not say a photo sharing service of your choice
thank
will
you.
Suck if you don't call.
Yes.
That's
okay,
my point.
Okay, proceed.
Way to cut me off. Let me tell my story, damn it.
It was a sucky story.
I've never known angry Charlie before. Angry, you know, Charlie.
So my point is, we all need editor. Spielberg has an editor. We need an editor. Whether it be a podcast, a video, a photo, a tweet, rewrite your shit. You know, don't just hit post. Think about it. Go back to that whist. Would I share this?
Can I say something too? Can I say something real fast? Or,
you know, sure.
I just thinking.
You're the professor. Just go.
I was just thinking that you know, complacency is death to growth. And obviously, you know, there was a study that came out years ago before a lot of you were born that I covered for the Associated Press, and it was like 7 out of 10 Americans think that they're frauds at what they're doing and are going to be discovered at any minute, uncovered. And the problem is, I really like that 7 out of 10. It's generally the 3 out of 10 I don't like, the real arrogant, cocky people who really think their shit don't stink. They tend to stagnate and not grow. You know, there's nothing. And you were talking about, you know, the repetition by doing something over and over and over again. So, and it does. You do get better. I've been drawing. I've never taken an art class. I've never been to the university. I'm just a high school graduate. But I've learned. I love to draw, and I've drawn all the time. And I love design. You don't become a good designer because you took a design class. You become a good designer because you're a slut for design. And you just, excuse me, that's a, no, women, I'm.
We've just lost three advertisers.
We've just lost three advertisers. But it's like, because you just absolutely love design. And so we have to become self-learners and constantly be insecure about where we are so that we get better and we grow and we try to be better storytellers. You can learn anything if you really focus on it. But if you're complacent, you're one of those 3 out of 10. Well, okay, maybe 1% actually are really nice people who are really good at what they do. The rest of us are constantly searching for a way to improve ourselves. And that's what life is all about. I have constantly reinvented myself. And it's a process. You never get there in life. You never get there. You do a great story, someone just did a better one, and you hate yourself. I'm going to do that next time. I'm going to kick that guy's ass next time. I'm very competitive. I hate sports. I've hated football. That was my brother down in Cubicle 3. But I'm very competitive in journalism, and I hated to be beaten. And you got to hate to be beaten. You got to hate it, because that drives you too. Whatever drives you, find it out, and that's a good thing. Insecurity, whatever the hell it is, and you'll get better.
Pat, you know, if you're working for the weekend, you're doing it wrong. You have to love this work. And whether you may be doing locking washers, you better love the people you're doing it for and humanize the brand. You need to find something about that story that you love, because this is all about passion. One of CC's new projects is called PassionHit.TV. And you interview people talking about...
You now? That was great.
PassionHit.TV. You interview people about what they love. And when someone's talking about what their purpose is, they just open up. There's this light that emanates from them. And so you need to point your pad or your camera or your iPad, whatever we're filming or capturing with, at people who love it, and you need to draw that passion out of them, because passion is compelling.
And that's the biggest trick whenever, you know, I've been doing a lot of talks on the book and whatnot, and one of the biggest questions I get is, well, where can I start? How do I get started telling my story? And the example I give that works for every single example, I've yet to have anybody challenge me on this, is get your fans to tell why you're awesome. You know, and I use fans generically. It could be your customers, could be your donors, could be fans if you're a musician, could be it could be anybody. But the people who love your brand or love what you're doing, get them to tell why you're awesome. That's where your story starts, because they're the key. That you want to be so powerful that people can tell your story for you. They become your advocates, or they're, you know, change from fans to advocates, or, you know, ambassadors. You can call them whatever you want. But if they're passionate about what you're doing, what you're creating, get them to tell the story for you. That's when you know you're doing it right. When you've got a story you've told so well that people are passing it on and on and on and on. I mean, you know, forgetting all the politics aside and all the discussions, you look at, you know, take any of these videos that gets mainstream enough, like the recent, you know, the Kony 2012 video that probably everybody has seen at this point. You know, it was a compelling story, whether you agree or disagree with everything they're talking about. It's a compelling story. It got people's attention, you know, and it's spreading like wildfire, and it's also hitting mainstream media now, and that story is getting told over and over again, and anybody who has seen it can then retell the story. So that's, always think how are you going to get people to tell your story for you.
Remember to come up, and if you have any questions, come and stand here.
Yeah, if there's questions at any time.
Just start coming up here.
So I got a question for you, because no one's coming up yet. I'm just going to keep asking questions so people come to the mic. Journalism, right? So journalism is evolving right now in a big, big way. I mean, if you only writing is only so far now. Can journalists tell stories and still be objective, or does it start getting slanted?
Well, that you just asked a mouthful of question.
I know
there's celebrity journalism now. There's opinion journalism. I work for the Associated Press, which survives because they are impartial, because they don't take sides. They have left-wing people publish left-wing, right-wing. But a journalist is just a really good storyteller. And I've known, you know, you pick on journalism, but I have known some of the finest. Matter of fact, a woman I used to date briefly was just killed in Syria, Marie Colvin, and was, you know, she was one of the best storytellers I ever knew in my life.
You
and
dated her?
Well, we just went out on two dates, but wow. it wasn't to be.
She was an amazing storyteller.
She was an amazing storyteller, and that's a person. You know, those are people who think of storytelling. I read a tweet somewhere like, "How can this amazing person have lived such an amazing life and when no one knew about her?" Because she tells other people's stories. She's not telling her own story. She pointed the camera at other people, not at herself. We're all pointing it at ourselves. We're all whores on Facebook and Twitter, and all it's about me, me, me. Well, there are people out there who aren't that, and that's what journalists do. They tell other people's story that are in no position to tell a story. So I have great respect for journalists, and they tell really good stories. Then there are the opinion journalists, the celebrity journalists, the humor journalists, you know, Jon Stewart. There's room for everybody now, because the power shift has changed in the world of media. In the old days, if you wanted power, you had to have money. You had to be able to publish a newspaper, run a TV station, and that's how you influence people. Now, everyone's a publisher, and it has diminished their influence and increased ours. And best storyteller wins.
It's diminished our excuses too, though. We've lost all. Well, the media won't cover my story. Oh, I can't get any airtime. Those are out the window. As a corporate marketer, you don't have excuses anymore. You control the camera. You control the con. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
So I was wondering if each of you could speak a bit about the idea of storytelling as emotion design and how conscious you are when you're thinking and when you're creating your story of the emotion that you intend to create. And how that connects to the brand or whatever it is that it's, the story is adjacent to.
I can talk about that if you wanted me to start.
Yeah.
But look, if you're not trying to tug at some emotion in a person, if you're not trying to get an emotional, animal, gut response from somebody with your story, why are you telling that story? You're just listening to some boring guy in the hallway. It's like the story, what really, remember, you want to educate and persuade. In order to do that, you have to hook them, and you hook them with a really great story that sends them on an emotional roller coaster ride. We watch movies. How many people just love to be bawling in a dark movie theater over some amazing movie? Raise your hand. I'm totally there. I love to cry in movies. I'm this sap. The only one who ever sees me is my wife, but now the cat's out of the bag. But I love to be totally taken on these roller coaster rides, and I love that movie. I recommend that movie. But if you sit there and it's just a story that's being told, it's all about connecting with the emotional capital that people have. That is your capital, is the emotional capital you can tell in a story. That's what has value. Your bullshit, you know, telling people how amazing you are has no capital with anybody. You want to hook them on some gut level, and I call it emotion.
So I cry during It's a Wonderful Life, and my wife loves to tease me about it. I'm a sap. But in coming from Detroit, we live and die by the auto industry, and every year we have the auto show. And at the International Auto Show, they bring out these really cool concept cars that have very dramatic lines and angles. And at the same booth, you'll hear half the people saying, "Wow, I love it, it's so futuristic." And the other half of the booth is going, "What the hell were they thinking?" And the designers are there taking all the feedback, and they go back in the studio with sandpaper, and they round off all the corners that offended someone. But in doing so, they round off all the corners that excited someone. So when that production model comes out, the people who loved it are like, meh. And the people who hated it are like, meh. Yeah. And the sales are like, meh. But you can't be afraid to piss people off. If you're dealing in emotion, if we round it off so it doesn't offend anyone, it's not going to excite anyone. So maybe you have to have edgier blog outposts for your brands to talk to a specific constituency.
I think pissing people off is one way to go. I like to be actually sort of an inclusive, more less. I'm not afraid to speak my mind and to piss people off. But I'm also, I like to tend, like with my students, I tried to bring them into the fold, not alienate the ones over. You know what, it's hard to explain, but yeah, it is one way to do it, is to be edgy and piss people off. But I think that also good to be sort of all embracing too. I mean, people love to be embraced just as much as they love to be angry.
And since they're pissed off too, I mean, what I always try to advise is, you know, don't be vanilla. Don't, you know, take a side. I don't care what side it is, you know, saying, "Oh, I read this
great
post." Don't
be vanilla.
I mean, right? Because it's either opinion and don't be scared to share that opinion, because that's what makes it compelling, right? Because people are going to disagree. You know, I know I haven't seen all these tweets, but I'm sure there's people in this room who don't agree, you know, but we're speaking from our heart what we think. So, you know, you guys are just dripping with passion. I'm the mellow one today. It's kind of different.
Yeah.
What do you think, Becky? Because you've been quiet.
My mind goes in a totally different direction when you ask that question. I'm thinking about, like, when I shoot weddings or events and stuff like that, my only goal is to, with the photos, tell the story as it's actually happening. So if, like, when they're cutting the cake and they smash it in each other's face, if everyone in the room laughed, by the time those pictures end up on those people's Facebook page later, I want everyone to laugh when they see the photo. I want them to experience it as it actually happened. So if it's waiting to snap until they're totally these stupid grins with frosting all over their face, then that's when you wait to take the picture. Or, you know, if everyone in the room is crying when they're having their first dance, it's like you take a picture of the people behind them crying. You know what I mean? So it's sometimes it's looking for the story in not the obvious place. Sometimes the center of the action isn't actually what you want. And for me, you know, thinking about emotion design, whatever the emotion is in the room or coming from the person or the person talking about it, whatever it is, whatever content you're creating, it's it's looking for where the emotion exists rather than necessarily what is supposed to be in the spotlight. So I think that there are just different ways to look at stories, and if you kind of force yourself to get out of your own way and kind of look at things as they're actually happening or how other people are experiencing them, sometimes there's more than one way to tell it and evoke some emotion, no matter what that is. So,
do you have a question?
So you talked a lot about visual storytelling, obviously, but how much do kind of fundamental storytelling elements play a role, like plot and character and conflict? How much do those play a role in developing stories?
I want to start.
Go ahead.
I think they're critical. I mean, a good story has an arc, right? Starts out, there's some conflict, something happens, hero finds the solution and comes out. I mean, I think the story arc is very, very important. And that's what makes, I mean, talk about a photo. Trying to get that story arc in one shot is near impossible. That's why, that's the difference between taking a picture and making a photo. There's very, very different things. I mean, you look at certain photos, you think of photos in your mind, they tell a story. Same thing with a good article. And what's challenging is, you know, if you're writing a small article, you know, having 1,000 words as opposed to 200 words, telling that, having that story arc is very, very hard. I think it's critical. I mean, whenever you're thinking about a story, you've got to think about that, and I don't think enough people do. You know, that's the balancing act from what Charlie was talking about getting it out there and getting it out there fast, is the really good storytellers think about that. They want to take the person through that story arc and get them, you know, they want them to feel it and, oh, my God, and is it going to work out, you know, whatever the story is. I mean, I think of, like Esquire magazine. Their articles are so well written that you're compelled to finish. So I think they're critical.
That's a really good point. There's a writer at Newsweek named Sharon Begley, right? Sharon Begley. Dorsey, my wife here, will read any story Sharon writes, and she's a science writer. And Dorsey, she actually said once that she reads anything this woman writes because she can make a bacteria sound like a murder mystery. And she does. She just rips you in, like she puts you in the primordial soup with that bacteria. You are in there, and you are being assaulted by all this bacteria. And it's all true. It's all fact based. You know, if you want to get people to read what you have to say about something as dull as bacteria in a petri dish, you've got to tickle people's imagination. Those of you that watched the Super Bowl ad about Detroit and cars, you know, that was so incredibly thought out, the way that M&M commercial for General Motors taught out. You remember, it was like this, I don't know if three of you saw it, it had a mood. You should Google this or look it up on YouTube. M&M ad Detroit. It was powerful. First of all, they decided to go with M&M on it because he's definitely a certain demographic. He just yells out, "Well, we're trying to reach that demographic that likes M&M." And also told the whole story of Detroit. And at the end, it concluded all about cars because that's what we do. And it was like powerful. Every word was handcrafted, handpicked to be exactly surgically targeted to mean and to convey a certain message to a certain audience that they hoped M&M would speak to. And it was a story that took you through that curve that CC just mentioned and came up with the conclusion, that's what we do, and end it. It was like, wow, oh my God, that's the most amazing commercial I've ever seen.
I mean, the audience has to be in mind when you're creating this stuff, because if you want them to relate to the hero, there's a certain way to create what you're doing so they'll relate to the hero. If you want them to relate to the victim, if you want them to respond to the conflict moment versus the resolution moment, you have to think about, what do you want the outcome to be, who's the audience going to be, and what do you need to highlight? I mean, you have to create it with that end goal in mind, or I don't know. There are different, like you guys have said, there's so many different ways to tell the same thing. You have to think through what the story is going to be first. I don't think it can just happen.
Yeah. And if you want a good example of this, I'm going to pimp a friend of mine and stuff, but if you go to boldedition.com, what they're doing is they're telling stories, and each piece of it is photography, video, and words to tell one story. And each piece individually is like a tease. It doesn't tell everything, so you have to watch the other pieces. So it's boldedition.com, but I think that's kind of a neat way of doing it, because it's a little bit of pieces, but it's all packaged and shared in one. And I think that's an interesting way to do it, because I can't do that. I can't imagine splitting it among different things. So I thought that was, it's one of my favorite examples. I mean, I'm personally interested in it too, but I think it's a really cool example of taking that arc and using the pieces of the story to tell it. across multiple mediums.
And those of you who haven't gone and searched Kurt Vonnegut's story graphs, you know, he plots a graph on different stories like Romeo and Juliet, and it's, you know, Cinderella, Star Wars. They're hilarious and they're so true. And it's a graph. It's a story graph. They're beautiful.
Does that answer your question?
Okay. Oh, awesome! All right.
Hi. Oh,
you can bend it down.
I don't have to stand on my toes.
No. That'd make a good story, though.
What does your T-shirt mean, J.E.?
Justin Townes Earle, the musician.
Oh,
Steve
cool.
Earle's son.
Nice.
I love the T-shirt.
I love it, too. It's
awesome.
My favorite.
Very nice.
Thank you. I work for the YMCA, and I just... Yeah, no, I know.
I knew he was... Charlie did it, right? I didn't even look.
I know.
What did he say? What happened?
When you rolled your eyes, I'm like, I know Charlie's doing it.
What's he doing?
The dance.
Oh.
I know. Which, like, didn't even need to look.
I guess we sort of endorse. I don't know. So I just got recently hired to work in marketing for the development department. So I'm trying to tell stories to get people to donate their money to us because we're a nonprofit. And so I just got started, and I interviewed 10 or 15 people. I did video interviews with people. I come from a film background. Tell me why you love the why. Like, what's your why story? Mm-hmm. What's it all about? And got some really great interviews, have some great pieces, but I realized that everybody has the same why story.
Oh.
Like, I was this or I was that, and the why changed my life because I got in shape.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to tell this sad, like, sobby story over and over again, and I'm getting ready to do it to find more people. So should I be looking for different people, asking different kinds of questions, designing it differently, edit it, like, how can I change this up to make
B-roll.
It...
B-roll.
No, sir. I think B-roll, it can be something very powerful, because someone can tell the same story, and how you pair it up, you know, someone's in the pool on one, you are able to show the facets of what the Y offers, and see how this person was helped through this activity.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're all drawn in by different things... You know, rather than just showing a talking head, that B-roll can make it powerful.
And one of the things I just want to say that one of my students made, my students I have them do video, guitar, all sorts of different things. One of them is this personal profile I talked about. One of them, some of them do all the big bells and whistles and flash and the B-roll and all this great stuff. It's a visual candy store of things to look at. Another one just told a story, just this one kid sitting there. She had multiple cameras going, or she moved around. She told this one kid had such a compelling story. He kept talking about his mother and when he was 10, he was 19 now. When he was 10, though, there was this thing that happened with his mother, and he wasn't quite sure what was happening. And his dad woke him up in the middle of the night and picked him up and carried him out to the car and put him in his car as a 10-year-old, and he took him to the hospital. And there were nurses, and he wound up hiding under a chair in the waiting room of this hospital. He didn't understand what was happening. They kept saying, "Mother, my mother, my mother." And then they came over and they said, "You know, we still don't know. All this way into it, what the hell happened to his mother? We're on the edge of our seats. It's not that they're telling this. No, she was hit by a drunk driver and she was brain dead, and she died.
It
was a bad story." And so they had.
I didn't know where this was going either. I was like, "Oh,
but
God.
You see, you don't know where the story is going. The point is, it's not that they're telling the same story over and over. Oh my God, I'm all buff now. It's how you tell the story. That's where you have to come up with the idea of theater and building expectation, building tension, and find a story that isn't just, oh, I'm all buff now because I went to the Y. Find a story about somebody that tell it in a way, the way movies are, you know, they cut to the past, they go to the future, or they build, they don't even tell you what the story's about until you're two-thirds of the way through, so build tension. It's how you tell a story. You can tell those stories, you just have to tell them better.
Or flip, and the other way, specifically with the Y, too, I mean, flip it on the other side. Ask the people who work at the Y, ask them what the greatest thing they've ever seen. Find that woman who's, you know, worked behind the desk at the Y for 20 years and say, why do you come to work every day?
Ask people who have already donated money why they donated money.
Yeah.
Or ask them what the funniest thing ask the people, what's the funniest thing you've ever seen at the Y? Just have people just cut back and forth. There was like this guy, oh my God, he like slipped on this bar of soap. And
yeah, because that's the story
just the beginning.
They want to tell.
No, then he landed on his ass, he slid off the diving board and landed in the pool, you know. I mean, whatever it is, but humor is great. Think about the mood you want to create.
Humor is great, but humor is a real fine
slippery
edge.
It's the bar of
soap. You got to be careful.
Yes.
You got to be careful because people take humor differently.
Anyway, Yeah.
Just quick follow-up. Do you have... because I need to work on my interview skills, probably. I always get touchy about like taking up too much people's time like I am now. What's a good question to ask somebody?
Number one, don't worry about taking up their time. Make them do what you want them to do. You make them, I need to do this. Capture room ambience with the microphone for a minute. Have them be still for quiet. Don't you ever talk while you're interviewing them because you have to cut your own voice out. It really sucks.
Yeah.
What else did you want to ask?
Just...
I think another thing to do there is interview them off camera, because a lot of people, their emotion closes up when they're on camera. So if you can do them audio while you're walking down the street, kind of do an NPR style, and then you're editing that voice back in with good B-roll, you'll get people to open up more than when they will on screen.
But remember, just because they have a good story doesn't mean they can tell a good story.
Right.
And this might be overly simple, but don't have them look at the camera. Like, set the camera up here, and then you stand here and have them tell the story to you.
And when in doubt, don't say anything. The best interview tip is, so you ask the question, and they finish their answer, and just
keep staring at them. Go like this. Uh-huh. Don't you talk.
Yeah,
and they'll go, and I was molested as a child. You know, they're looking for something to tell you. They're gonna give you all the bullshit. They're gonna give you all that. Yeah, I'm important. You know, I'm the vice president of this and this. And you go,
you're the angel.
And I have two kids.
Okay. Yeah.
And I feel really guilty about cheating on my wife. I'm so sorry. You know, just make them. They'll feel uncomfortable. They'll fill the silence with something to say, like I am right now. Actually, we're running out of time, and there are a couple of other people. So,
good luck with the Y.
Good luck, though. Send us what you do.
Everyone, please donate $5 to the YMCA.
Everybody donate $5 to the Y. Yeah. Her Y. Okay. The Austin Y.
All right, thank you. My name is Steve Cohn. I'm a founder of a company called iRive. And what we're trying to do is help you, it's a product that helps you tell the story of your trip through the aggregation of the content that you create through social media, different social media services. We aggregated, the itineraries aggregated. And we lay it out visually in a way to help you tell the story without really you doing anything. It just kind of
lays
it out for you.
What's the URL again?
iRive. The word arrive with an I instead of an A.
Oh, I see. iRive.
So my question is, what products have you seen? There was some debate around Instagram whether that's a storytelling product or not. But what products have you seen that you feel the execution of the product, maybe it's certain parts of the execution that really jumped out at you?
Cowbird.com.
That you felt helped people, their users, tell their story.
Cowbird.com is my favorite right now. It's Jonathan Harris. He's the one who came up with he's come up with a lot of different things. If you just look up Jonathan Harris on Google, he's
Cowbird.
Brilliant, and he just said after 2 years of blood, sweat, tears, lots of vodka tonics, he just finished programming Cowbird, and it's for
Cowbird?
Cowbird.com. If you want, he explains why he calls it Cowbird, but he's really, really put a platform up there, and you have to be invited to join. You have to request. It's not like Pinterest where you request and they automatically approve you because you just become a member of some bullshit exclusive club. He really chooses who tells his stories.
That's kind of like a blog, though. It's not a product, really, is it?
Oh, well, you're asking about a product.
Yeah, no. It's a product.
Oh, it's a product.
Products have you seen that you feel help their users? So there's, you know, obviously, I think that's what the timeline with Facebook's about.
I beg your pardon.
Whether that's a good execution or not, it's debatable. But what products have you seen where you think has been good execution that helps the users share their story, whatever that story is?
So one of my favorites is Storify, where it's great for, like, if I wanted to afterwards here, an example, if I wanted to tell the story of this panel, I can go out to Storify afterwards and pull blocks of text, if I want, of tweets, and I could pull Instagram photos, and it allows me to pull it together into a simple blog post in a single way, but pulls from multiple channels. It's one of my favorite ones for something like that, and I could just as easily, I'm using this panel as an example, I could easily do it for when I get back from South By and do a whole Storify on one. That's the first one that comes to mind for me that I just absolutely love.
You know,
my favorite is early.com, E-R-L-Y. It's basically like, it's sort of like a timeline, but not like Facebook timeline. It's just like really pretty. And basically you can just put in photos and videos and links and little stories and stuff like that. And, you know, you can comment on everything, but it only goes in a linear direction. So it just creates this totally visual time. It's beautiful. I make stuff on all the time. So that's my favorite for that.
Yeah. I have a website that brings a lot of these different tools. I think I have about 100 visual tools on it. If you want to write this down, it's called, I get nothing from it. It's just where I store all my stuff. It's freevisualtools.wikispaces.com. And I have, depending on the tool you're looking for, and all of it is about storytelling, there's everything from timelines to statistics to videos, photo, narratives, all sorts of tools on there that are all for telling stories. You can just go browse through all of them. I mean, everything, it's all in there. And tell me if you miss, I'd love to add more stuff to it, but sorry, I didn't answer that. But
earlier, one of you said that people are very focused on pointing the camera at themselves, and I've noticed the same problem with brands. And I wondered, how would you convince them to point the camera elsewhere, or how would you integrate the brand's story into the other stories surrounding it?
Can I take this one? Because yeah. We just did it. So one of our clients is Porsche, and we had a campaign that was called Engineered for Magic Every Day, and the idea is everybody thinks the Porsche driver is like this midlife crisis douchebag, basically, and that's just, it's... in some cases true, but it's not always. So the idea is sure, it's this magical car, but, it can be used for every day. So part of what we did was we built a website, and it was entirely designed around this mosaic of driver stories. It's PorscheEveryday.com if you want to look at it. But basically, we sent out flip video cameras to Porsche owners and said, why do you love your car? Record it and send it back to us. And we didn't... we professionally produced like some photos and some of the videos at events and stuff like that, but for the most part, this was entirely built from the brand or the agency or any of us being totally hands-off and just asking for stories. And then we created a system where people could just submit their own, and over time as it grew, it just basically created this entire world of people who bought the car, loved the car. There's the guys that are like, I love driving my daughter to school in it because she like feels awesome getting outside, or I like the magic of going to pick up pizza from Domino's in my Porsche because I get to drive my Porsche. So it's whatever it is, but that was an example of what we did for.
I think that works. That works really good if you have a passion brand, but if you're selling a more innocuous product, well, A, try and put some remarkable into the product, but you may need to find something tangentially related to the brand that people are passionate about, because talking about a Me Too product isn't compelling.
But you know that story, the Razor? Have everybody seen the Razor video?
Oh, gosh. Well, so such a good example.
It's such a good...
Dollar Shaving Club.
Dollar Shaving Club. That guy, he's pointing the brand at himself. It's freaking shaving razors. Who gives a damn? But it's like, I'm totally, totally signing up for that because I loved the way he talked about his brand. So, there was a way to point your brand at you without just saying, I'm amazing. You've got to show some personality. What is it? Wrap it up. Okay, we're done. Right. Sorry, one more quick one there. Sorry.
Do you have a quick question?
Behind you?
I don't know. You guys can decide. My question was, you talk about the quality of the story and how the higher the quality, the more eyeballs you're going to get. But I think the reality is that people tend to gravitate more and more towards looking at, pictures of cats or Pinteresting while you guys are telling really interesting stories. And so I would love it if you could address the fact that there's a problem beyond content here, and there's just a general overflow of everyone's periphery and the tendency to kind of find your niche. So do you have any suggestions in terms of storytelling to think about that, combat that, or anything on those lines?
Okay. Go, but be quick. Go.
Accentuate the negative. Great example, if you go to the Adverb blog today, look at the Longman and Eagle example, how they took a customer complaint on Yelp and turned it into something, a banner for the brand.
The Alamo Draft House.
The Alamo Draft House did the same thing with a complaint on voicemail, and they turned it into a viral video. So it's another way to find a cool facet.
Do the unexpected. Find when you're telling that story, if it's unexpected enough, it'll get people's attention. But unfortunately, you're right. There's so much out there.
But still,
it's an interesting problem to have, because people are watching the silly cat videos and all the stupid stuff like that. But there's this. I'd like to say, I don't want to say it's a renaissance, but there seems to be this shift happening where people are creating these really beautiful pieces of storytelling. I mean, like made by hand. Go out to Vimeo. It's so beautiful. Or spend time on Vimeo, not on YouTube. They don't pay me, but God, if you want to see good storytelling. Go to Vimeo instead of YouTube because that's all they do is tell great stories. But there are starting to be more and more sites who are sharing this great content. And if you've got a story you want to tell, find those sites that are sharing the good stuff rather than the silly videos. And reach out to them and say, hey, I've got this story to tell, and build those relationships. It's not, unfortunately, there's no, I wish there was a magic answer, but there's not. Because let's face it, there is so much being created every day.
One of my favorite storytellers.
She's telling us to wrap up.
Yeah,
really,
we got
to
go.
Yeah. Go to Vimeo, lemonadedetroit.com. You'll see some really good storytelling.
Local.
In Austin.
And I just started blogging last week for the first time. I've got 5 blog pieces, okay. But I'm at carlgood.com, so follow me.
All right. Make sure promotion. They're going to be sending out things to get to review the sessions, good or bad, and please make sure you do it because that's how South By gets better every year. So please make sure you review this session. Thank you for coming.
Thanks for coming.
She even stretched the applause.
Yeah, I like it. Do you know, coffee? I was just kidding.